Om Mauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Nirvanam. Om Mauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Nirvanam. Parashishtante Vasadrishiganai Ravritam Brahmanishtai. Parashishtante Vasadrishiganai Ravritam Brahmanishtai. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramananda Murtim. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramananda Murtim. Swatmaramam Muditavadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Swatmaramam Muditavadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Balya Dishwapi Jagrada Dishitata. Sarvasvavastasvapi Vyavrittasvanivartamanam Aham idyantas purantam sada Swatmanam prakriti karoti bhajatam. Swatmanam prakriti karoti bhajatam. Yo mudraya bhadraya. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Balya Adishu Api Jagrat Adishu Tata Sarvasu Avastasu Api Vyavritasu Anuvartamanam Aham Iti Antas Purantam Sada Swatmanam Prakati Karoti Bhajatam Yaha Mudraya Bhadraya Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namaha Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Sandhi. Okay. An avastha is a state of experience. Avastha is this, when we say, often we use avastha, there's one teaching methodology that's called the avastha traya sakshi. The one who is the witness of all three triad states of experience is a teaching methodology. Avastha, a state of experience, if we're talking about waking, the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, those are all considered avasthas. But also, other things are avasthas, states of experience, like, for instance, in this verse where it says, balya. Balya means when you are a young child. So, childhood. But it says balyadi, adi stands for etc. So, for instance, one state of experience for you is when you're a little child. Another is when you're in puberty. You know, another state is when you're, so you're a little child, then you're seven, you're a little older, you know, not two or three anymore, but now you're from four to eight, like that. Then you're a teenager, that's a state of experience. then you're becoming older, you're middle-aged, that's a state of experience. These are all avastas. There's also the student avasta. You can be a brahmachari. That's an avasta. It's a state of experience, a time. It's a time period of sleep. You know? Or you could be, you know, you could be a householder. It's a certain stage of life. These are stages of life. So these are called avastas. Technically, though, when we say avasta, we're talking waking, dream, deep sleep, because waking, dream, deep sleep covers your whole day, right? So that those three avastas cover everything. But any time you're in a given state of experience that's replaced by another state of experience, like childhood is replaced by middle age, for instance, like that, teenage years, then you have this one state of experience replaced by this state of experience replaced by this state of experience. So here what it says is balyadishu, in childhood, etc. That shu is locative singular. In childhood, etc. means childhood, middle age, old age. In childhood, etc., in these states of experience. And it says jagrat adishu. Jagrat is the waking state. In these states of experience, jagrat, etc., the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state. So the first one, they're talking about stages of life, ages that you're going through, periods that you're going through. Those are avastas. Those are states of experience. And the second one, they're talking about waking, dream, and deep sleep as the three avastas that you go through in a given day. Tata, similarly, says, so first it says, then it says, sarva avastasu api. In all of these avastas, sarva means all, in all of these avastas, such as childhood, etc., such as the waking state, etc., in all of them, vyavritasu, in all of these avastas, in all of these states of experience, they are vyavrita, they are changing. What they mean there by changing is that one state replaces the other, right? One state replaces the other, so they're incompatible with each other. The waking state is incompatible with the dream state. The dream state and the waking are incompatible with the deep sleep. They don't coexist. When the one is, the other is not, right? They displace and replace each other. The childhood state is replaced by the teenage state, is replaced by the middle age state. You can't go back, you know. One state is there, and one state is there, the other is not. You can even look at avastas in terms of emotional states of experience. When the sad state is there, the happy state is not. When the angry state is there, the peaceful state is not. These avastas, they change. They're replaced by other avastas. So that's the vyavritasu. Then it says, so in all of these avastas, in all of these changing states of experience, anuvartamanam. Now this anuvartamanam means there's a word that we call, another form of this word is called anuvritti. Anuvritti means that which is present, that which is to be found there in all of these changing avastas, that which runs through all of the changing avastas. Sometimes we think of it like, if you, it's not the best example, but say if you have a string of beads, the string runs through equally all of the beads, right? So each bead is different from every, each bead is different and unique, but the string has an anuvritti, it goes through all of the, it goes through every bead, it's to be found in every bead. Here there's something that has an anuvritti, means its presence is to be found there in every avasta. But the avastas themselves, the states of experience themselves, replace each other. They're not compatible with each other. When one is, the other is not. When that one is, the other is not, like that. So anuvritti means there's something that, something which is present to every, to each avasta. The avastas doesn't replace it. Okay. So here, what is that? Aham iti. Aham means I. Antaspurantam. The I, that which is, antas means inside, spurantam, shining. Sada means always. That which is always shining inside. Spurantam is meant for, it's a word that's used for consciousness. Literally means shining, you know, pulsing. That which is shining inside as the hum, as the aham, which is anuvartamanam, which is remaining there, right? Which is remaining there, being there in all of the changing avastas. Every state of experience that you have, every mental state of experience that you have, every perception that you have, one perception, if I'm looking here, right, this perception is totally replaced by this perception, is totally replaced by this perception. They don't have any similarity, right? If I'm looking at this wall, I'm not looking at this wall, I'm certainly not looking at this wall. And so this is one state of experience, one state of experience, one state of experience. You can go so far as to say, any given vritti, any given thought modification, which can be an emotion or a perception or an imagination or an intellection, any given thought modification, any given vritti is, in a sense, we can say, we don't usually use the word like this, but we can say this is an avastha. This is a state of experience, this particular vritti. And this particular vritti is displaced by the next vritti. We go with avastha, we usually go in big sweeps, like the waking state. That's a big sweeping avastha, right? It means that I have this physical body and my sense organs are awake to this particular plane of existence. That's the waking state. But we can break it down to much smaller avastas, much smaller components, your given thought modification. So each thought modification that you have is replaced by another. So it's avastha, 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 avastha. Right? And each avastha is changed, is incompatible with the next. Incompatible with the next means the following avastha replaces this one. The following vritti replaces this vritti. That vritti's long gone. Okay? The same waking, dream, deep sleep is the same way. Ages, the stages of life that you go through the same way. The different moods that you go through the same way. Each one is an avastha. But in each avastha, each one changing and being displaced by the others, there is an anuvritti. And what is the anuvritti? Me. There's no other anuvritti. I am the anuvritti. The aham, the I, means that which is shining inside and is labeled as I am. That's just, the I is just a word. It's a word, but the word has a subject. Any word that you use has a padartha. This is kind of a nice word. The word padartha, pada, the word pada, pada means word. But if I say pada, that means word, if I translate it. Padartha means the meaning of the word. Artha means meaning. So the padartha is the object, the meaning of the word. The pada is the word. So here, this is a padartha. The padartha is lamp. The pada is the word lamp, right? So this is padartha, the meaning of the word lamp. So this is a desk. So desk, the object is the padartha. Desk is the word, desk is the pada. So now when you say aham, aham is a word. Or do you say aham, I is a pada, right? The word I has a meaning, right? It's not just a word. Words are not meaningless words. If I make up a word and say gagubaga, that's a sound sequence that has no meaning, gagubaga. So if I say gagubaga, that's Swamiji's word for a meaningless word, is gagubaga, I think it is gagubaga. It's a meaningless sound sequence that doesn't generate anything in your mind, you know, except I don't know what that means. That's what it generates. What is that? What is that sound sequence? I don't know. But that's not true for lamp or chair or desk or I. When you use the word I, it is referring to me. It's referring to something. And so now what this says is, sada means always, at all times, shining inside, meaning shining inside of all of these avastas, of all of these states of experience, right? As I, right? So shining inside as I in all of these three states of experience, then what? So that's these first two lines. So we need the next line. He says, Swatmanam, one's own self, Swatmanam, one's own self, me, one shining as I, which is always shining inside all of these avastas as I. So what about this swatma, one's own self, that's shining inside of all of these avastas? Prakati karoti bhajatam yaha mudraya badraya. Then tasmai Shri Guru Murtiye Nama Idam Shri Dakshinamurtiye. Salutations to Lord Dakshinamurti, my teacher, who is in the form of my teacher, Yaha, who, with the most auspicious mudra, you know, the mudra is a formation of the hand. You know, different mudras are formations of the hand that have a meaning. Badra means auspicious. Badriya means by this Badriya mudriya. Mudriya Badriya. Badra is auspicious. The one who, my teacher, Lord Dakshinamurti, in the form of my teacher, who, salutations to him, who, by this chin mudra, this auspicious mudra, this one, bhajatam, for all of his, bhajatam are all those who serve him. It's a word that they use for the students. And the students all do seva to the guru. They take care of things, they take care of his or her home, and they do this, and then they bring all the they bring the wood for the fire, and they make the tea and all of these kind of things. That's what they do. It's seva. They all have different ways they serve their teacher. And so in the service and giving respect to the teacher, all of these things come under this word bhaj. So bhajatam is in the genitive plural. It means for those who are the students, for those who are serving the teacher in this way, it means his students. So for Dakshinamurti, the salutations to my teacher, to the Lord, to Dakshinamurti, who is now in the form of my teacher and the whole Sampradaya coming down, he says, by means of this chin mudra to his students, giving this chin mudra to his students, what happens? Prakriti karoti. He reveals, he unfolds. Prakriti. Prakatam means to have manifest. Prakriti karoti, he makes manifest, means he reveals. He reveals what? Swatmanam, the one's own self. That's the teaching, right? So he reveals the nature of the self. The one who is always shining. Sada means always without change. The one who is always shining as consciousness, as aham, as the I, in all of these states of experience. So through this mudra, so now this mudra you can take as the body, mind, sense organs. You can take as the waking, dream, deep sleep. You can take these avastas in sets of three. We usually say body, mind, sense organs. But it can also be the waking, dream, deep sleep. You know, I am the waker. Then you say like this, I am the waker, I'm the dreamer, I'm the deep sleeper. Where this is the ahankara, this is the aham. The aham is usually attached, right, to the body, mind, sense organs, or to the waker, dreamer, deep sleep. These are all the avastas. And so when it's attached, right, that's the state of ajnanam, where the conscious being that I am, because of this adhyasa, because of ajnanam, because of ignorance, is taken to be one with these avastas. Right? But this is where the aham is now associated, is now given to and attached to Brahman, not to the body, mind, sense organ. So actually this chin mudra is a Mahavakya, right? Where this is, here's the jiva, right? Here's the jiva, body, mind, sense organs, waker, dreamer, deep sleep, here's the jiva. And now this jiva, there's the self of the jiva, this is the Atma, right? You think that the Atma, the Ajnani, thinks that this Atma here, right, is part of this. Mm-hmm. This is me, right? Mm-hmm. But now what happens is that the Atma is released from this and recognized as being Brahman. Brahman means the self that is infinite, the self that is the same in all beings, the self that is the Chidananda, the self that is the self of Ishwara, right? And so the recognition then, if you think of my dream metaphor that I always use, and say the teacher and student are sitting in the dream meadow, you know, what is the recognition that has to take place? Is that for the student in sitting in the dream meadow, that student thinks this. This is what the student thinks. When it thinks this, when it recognizes this, then the self that's illumining the body, mind, sense organs of the character of the student in the dream meadow is recognized to be the self that illumines the whole dream meadow. In other words, that self no longer is attached to any given part in the dream meadow. That's exactly the same here, where when I go from this to this, what I recognize is the self that I am, the self-evident self, the conscious being that I am, is the conscious being that you are and you are, and the very conscious being that illumines the table and illumines that in which the whole room that we can extend to the whole universe exists. Right? So from the so that's interesting if we look at, because that really is the is this the vision is this. Here's how to understand it. The me, the conscious being that I am, right, is not dependent on body, mind, sense organs. Body, mind, sense organs may be dependent on it. That's another issue, and that is also true. But consciousness is not dependent. My consciousness, my being, is not dependent on it. Mm. It's asanga. Mm. It's not attached, right? It's not dependent. That means in the presence or absence of this body, mind, sense organs is totally irrelevant to me. Right? There's no relevance at all. If the body, mind, sense organs, this one dies or drops, there is actually no experience of death at all, because it's asanga, it's not attached. So if, say here I am giving this chin mudra, we could all be giving the chin mudra, because it's the same story for each one of us. The self is not attached to the body, mind, sense organs, or to the waker, dreamer, deep sleeper. If it's not attached, right, then there is nothing about these upadis, the body, mind, sense organs, that differentiate me from you. Right? Because if you are asanga to your body, this body, mind, sense organs, and I'm asanga to the body, mind, sense organs, right, then what would make me different from you? Right? And so if I say, if I'm asanga, now so start, if we say that, I'm asanga, means there's no way that just like the space is asanga to everything in this room. Right? The things move through space, but the space, they don't have any hold on space. So like that, the body, mind, sense organs, you know, are, I am asanga to that. Nothing grabs me or hooks me in any way. And so say that is true for all of us. Now there's nothing to differentiate me from you, because everything that I take to be me, other than just the conscious being that I am a sangha from. See what I mean? So that means that there's no differentiation there from between me and you. And now what if we make it into a bigger, do the avesta, make it a bigger avesta. We do waking, dream, and deep sleep. Now, I'm a sangha from the waking, the dream, and the deep sleep. You also are a sangha from the waking, dream, and deep sleep, right? So now, here's a waking state. This whole waking state goes. That means the physical body, say this room is the waking state. This waking state goes. Mm. All bodies go, right? Mm. And is replaced by a dream state, okay? Mm. Now, waking state is gone. But I'm a sangha. It makes no difference to me or to any of us whether the waking state is gone. Dream state is here. So now dream state is here. Same situation. Within the dream state, waking, dream, within the dream state, body, mind, sense organs, I am a sangha. Then you take the dream state as a whole, move the whole creation, dream creation, to the side. I'm still a sangha. Right? And so whether we're talking about myself within a given state or I'm talking about the removal of the entire state, I am still a sangha. That's why these three, using waking, dream, and deep sleep, on the one hand, how to see that myself, the Atma, the conscious being that I am, has an anuvritti between waking, dream, and deep sleep means I am present to all three states while these three avastas displace themselves. You know? It means I am free, I'm a sangha, nothing happens to me. The waking state is here, I'm present to the waking state. Waking state goes, I'm still here, present to the dream state. Dream state goes, I am still here, without any subject-object differentiation, right? Because when the dream state, the mind is in the deep state, mind is inactive. But I wake up from that state. When I wake up and the mind is active, then what does my mind say? It has that, what we call pratyabhijna. Remember this term, pratyabhijna? Pratyabhijna means that I recognize myself as being present in experiences that have been replaced by other experiences. You know, like if I can say, this is a pratyabhijna. You know? I say I'm in the waking state, I say, I had a dream. I had a dream. It was my dream. And in that dream, I took on this character. That state of experience is no longer there. But in this waking state, I have a pratyabhijna where I can say, I, the one who am the waker, had the dream. It's not somebody else's dream. So the atma stays the same. The self stays the same. I have a pratyabhijna toward my waking, toward the dream, deep sleep state. I say, I slept well. I slept well last night. I didn't know anything, you know. I don't even remember dreaming. So now I have a pratyabhijna of that state of experience, even though in the deep sleep state the antakarna is still there, but it's in unmanifest condition. It's in causal condition. And so it's not able to generate any experience. So you talk about that when you're awake and it is functioning, then you say, in that state, there's no knowership, there's no subject-object relationship, but I am the one who had that deep sleep. I am the one who dreamt. I am the one who am now awake. That's the pratyabhijna, where you yourself, your mind, identifies the anuvritti, the continuity of your own presence. Even though, when you look at waking, dream, and deep sleep, these three avastas, they negate each other. Right? When the waking state of avasta is there, your body is there, and your role in life is there, all of these things. When you go to the dream, it's a different reality, and you've taken a different body, different relationship, all kinds of different things are happening that are not happening in the waking state, right? But yet you say, I, who am the waker, is the one who had the dream. That's pratyabhijna. You identify with both states, but what you have to do to find out who that one is in both states is to remove from your being what each state eliminates by its presence. In other words, the dream state, what does the dream state eliminate by its presence?
Waking.
Yeah, everything that's in the waking state. That means your body, in fact, your body, your mind, your sense organs, all your relations, the subject-object relationship that takes place in the waking state is negated by the dream state. You have the dream state, you have another body, or no body at all. You know, you have another body, another situation, you know, which is different than what's going on in the waking state. So experientially, you're still there. But who is the you that is still there? In terms of the totality of your experience, which includes subject and object, everything that you would normally identify has been displaced. That is no problem for you because in reality you are a sangha. Yourself is not dependent on those states. Yourself is not dependent on knowership. In fact, in the deep sleep, there is no knowership. There's no knowership, there's no enjoyership, there's just being. It's all with ajnanam, you know? That's no problem. You have no problem not experiencing the world. You have no problem not commenting on what's going on about in your deep sleep state. It doesn't make any difference because your nature itself is a sangha. It's as it always has been, and it's whole and complete in and of itself. So now with this pratyabhijna, you do it in waking, dream, deep sleep state. You can see my being isn't touched by any state of experience. Then you go into any given state, like this waking state. And is that pratyabhijna there? Is the anuvritti? Pratyabhijna means there must be an anuvritti. It means there must be someone who is that me, the I, specifically for pratyabhijna, the I must be an anuvritti. It must be present in all of those experiences so the mind can say, You know, I was, you know, the one who was a child is the one who was a teenager. The me that was a child is the me that was the teenager, is the same me that was the adult, is the same me that is older now. That's pratyabhijna, where I recognize the anuvritti of my presence in these changing states of experience. I mean, in the child experience, that's, you know, what, there's a total change of cells every 7 years or something like that. That child experience is different. The body, the mind, the amount of knowledge that you have, going from a, you know, a 3-year-old to a 7-year-old to a 15-year-old, the body and the mind and the whole development of the upadhi is totally different. You know, but the pratyabhijna is there. I am the one who is this one and this one and this one and this one. And even though these states are negating each other. So, who is that one? That's the one who is asanga from this, whose identity is with Brahman. Brahman means the Satchidananda, the being, the conscious being, which itself is limitless, which is the self of Ishvara. Brahman, when you say Brahman, you mean the self of Ishvara. What does that mean? Is that the conscious being, when you say Atma, we're looking at the conscious being that you are, that you identify when you say, you know, I am. You can have identification with your body, mind, sense, organs, but you say, I am a conscious being. That conscious being that you take to be dependent on the body, mind, sense, organs is not. It is not. That self, that is you. You know, it's not that it's not you. It is you. But this is the truth of it. The body, mind, sense, organs are there. The waker, dreamer, deep sleeper are there. These things are, the states of experiences are there. You know, and you are the anuvritti. You are central to them. But as they come and go, you don't. Whether it be waking, dream, deep sleep, or different states, different vrittis in the mind, your being is constant and changeless, and is the very, it is the very being that is the same in all beings. Your being is the same in all beings. Your being, this conscious me that I am, is Ishvara. Yeah? That's why with Vedanta, when this is understood, when you see it, there is no more seeking for identity with the Lord, the union with the Lord. Mm-hmm. There's not union, there's identity. That's the greatest union there can be. The whole Mahavakya is Tatvamasi. You are that. It's not you're united with that. That you are that. So the mind then, and body and sense organs, all experience is never away from the self, which is the self in all beings, which is the self of Ishvara. And so then the mind feels, recognizes that it feels totally held, because the being that you are, right, is the being that Ishvara is. This body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishvara, right? Part and parcel of Ishvara. The mind is part of Ishvara. It's held by all the laws of the total. The body held together by all the laws of the total. They belong to Ishvara. They're just like this hand belongs to this body, you know, or the cells that are, the cells and the cells that are running through the body, you know, belong to the body. They're held together by, and they're held together by the laws of the whole. Like that, the body, mind, sense organs, the visupadi, are held together and belong to, you know, the whole. To the whole is Ishvara. And the conscious being that is you is the conscious being which Ishvara is. And so this body, mind, sense organs gets given over to the whole, which in fact you are, right? If the whole comes from the conscious being, from the self, which is Brahman, the whole manifest creation, you know, this whole manifest creation that comes, it comes from you. But this body and mind and sense organs and everything that can be called a conditioning adjunct or upadhi, it belongs to that, to Ishvara, you know? And so as you start, because of, with knowledge, you start pulling back all of the projections, you know, that where you feel, here I am, a limited being that has to have this, this, and this, and to be happy. You don't actually have to have anything to be happy. You already are the whole. Your being is the ananda. Your very being is the ananda. You know, and so as the mind I would say, adjust to this knowledge. You know, because all of the behavior that we have is kind of the opposite. But as the mind settles down into that realization, then it much more relaxes into to Ishvara. It relaxes into what Ishvara is doing. And then you participate in Ishvara's creation. You know? It's what is Ishvara doing now? What is Ishvara doing now? You know, and how do I... And I engage in that fully. That's what Swamiji's thing, there's no limit to the depth of what he says when he says, I just do what is in front of me to the best of my ability. I do my best moment to moment to moment with what is here. It's so simple. And you take each moment as it comes and each day as it comes. And that's all it is. You know? Then what gives you the sense of being whole or complete? You are whole and complete. That is your very nature, is whole and complete. What gives you a sense of not being, it's not a sense of being whole and complete. That is the norm. That is who you are. The sense of not being whole and complete and needing this and needing that comes simply from ajnanam, from ignorance and the projections that causes. You know, and then the mind gets itself into all kinds of twists and turns, and you know, worries and
knots,
and all kinds of knots, because I'm trying to get back to the wholeness and completeness that I've experienced before. You know, in those rare times when I'm not trying to create it. Swamiji, just when he always had so much love and respect for Ramana Maharshi. He never met him, but he always had a picture of him in his kutir and everything, and always wanted to meet him. And in fact, he was just ready to meet him. Was going to go there within 2 or 3 days, and Ramana passed away. So Swamiji went a little bit later and talked to one of his well-known disciples, who was just sitting and having satsang. And this particular disciple, if I remember the story correctly, he didn't really talk much. He just would sit quietly in the satsang. But Swamiji got a chance to talk with him and ask him a question. And his main question was, you know, what do I have to do to gain, you know, shanti? What should I do? You know, and so this disciple of Ramana says, that's just the problem. Don't do anything. You'll be fine. It's not about yet. There's nothing to do. The doing is the problem. The doing is the problem. Because, see, the thing is, your swarupa, who you are, is whole and complete and fine. It's perfect. It can't even be better. There's nothing you can do to make it better. Mm. You can't make it worse. Mm. You can't make it better. It is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. And by its very nature, it's ananda. It is whole and complete. It's absolutely fine. There's not any one that would even... any one of us, any human, any Ishvara that would want to change it. It is actually the whole. You are the whole. And so what causes the problem, what causes all of the pain, is the knots the mind gets into when it's trying to get back to itself. Right? Because all it knows is that I am this body, mind, sense organs. It's this. This is what it knows, you know. And it wants this. But it thinks that it has to get this out here. Mm-hmm. And the universe is so tricky, it creates that illusion also, because, well, if I could just fulfill this desire, if I could just have that, then I will feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, but what happens is, and it works, because it works only for a flash, but it does work, because every time you fulfill a desire, your mind doesn't want anything. At that time, you're not doing anything. Everything's fine because you just fulfilled the desire and another one hasn't come up. So the mind enjoys that beautiful shanti. But that shanti is a state of mind that will change. States of mind change. So by fulfilling a desire, taking a walk in nature, taking drugs, all of the variety of things that people do to get that shantavritti, They do it so they can feel more whole and complete, like themselves. But a jnani doesn't need all of these circuitous routes to have the shantavritti. Right? Because the jnani is the shanti. The self is already the shanti. And the mind just basks in that. It doesn't ask the universe. It doesn't ask Ishvara, oh, please give me this so that I can be happy. In fact, that's a whole other issue. We'll get into it next week. But you should be able to ask Ishvara, let me have this and let me have that, because at least you have an honest relationship with him, you know? And then Ishvara will say, okay, if it's good for you, I'll give it to you. If it's in your karma, you can have that. You know? And so then you get a little moment of shantavritti, but at some point you say, I don't want a moment of shantavritti. Isn't there a way that I can just be whole and complete? And then you need you need teaching. Mm. You need a pramana. Mm. It'll hold up and make you see that the one who is the very self of the mind is whole and complete. Mm. And the mind's scrambling around looking for that. And so that has to... The mind has to, that ajnanam has to be removed, so the mind, you know, it's like the sought is found to be the seeker. The sought is the seeker. It's the very being, the very self of the seeker. And if the mind wakes up to that, and then the problem is solved. Because the mind can never get away from the self, it can never lose the self. Its very being is the self, so the problem is solved. But the mind has to have some time to readjust itself, because its pursuit has always been external. Mm. So this is why this chin mudra is considered the most auspicious mudra. This particular mudra, it's Dakshinamurti's mudra, because the whole teaching is in this mudra. It's the Mahabhakya. Yeah, really beautiful. Okay, let's stop there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Question about the sense of why. And when you say that consciousness is the same in all of us, and there isn't not two, there's only one, and yet I always hear myself saying my consciousness. Is there a way of breaking out of that?
Yeah, no, but it's all right to say that, because it's just language. But if you say, but you have to know what you're saying. You know, you have to know that it's from the standpoint of the mind. Like even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, my self.
Yeah.
But but that's just talking from the standpoint of the mind. But you have to have knowledge to know what you mean. That the self that you are, right, mm-hmm. is the self where it's seen from the standpoint of the mind says myself. It's just the semantics. But the self is not, the self that you are is the self, which is the self in all beings.
But that word my seems to make habits, you know, for the mind.
Right, so you have to do some reflection on that, what you mean by that, you know. It's the same when in Panchadashi, where Vidyaranya says, you know, there's as a jnani, you can say, if you say, I am going to the store, right? The aham there is identified with the body, and you're very aware of that, so that you don't have to talk and say, the body is going to the store, but I'm really not. You don't have to say that, because you know what you mean when you're using the what. Like if you say, my mind is happy, you know, or my mind is agitated, or my mind is tired. You know it's not that the self has a mind which has become tired, or that I, the mind, am tired. But you're using the language in this way. And he even says, the only time you're going to be talking about yourself as Brahman is when you're teaching, mm-hmm. you know? Because mm-hmm. it's not table talk. It's a knowledge that you have. But it's not table talk, or you're not going to become strange in your use of language. Mm-hmm. You're not going to say the mind is thinking and the body's walking to the store, and, you know?
Well, what should I be thinking then when I say mind consciousness? I mean, it really does make it feel separate. I mean,
well, don't say it like that way then. If it makes you feel separate, then just let your mind, when you say aham, the I, let the I resolve into the consciousness, which is Ishvara. Ishvara means the self of Ishvara.
Mm. Mm.
So instead of saying my consciousness, just say me, I. Let the I. That's a really beautiful thing. It's a meditation, in fact, where you let the ahankara, the I, I won't even call it ahankara, the I thought, like the I am. Where does it land? When the I thought comes, where does it land? So let it land in the Atma, in the self, which is Ishvara, Brahman, you know. So you just notice that. As that I comes, let its meaning, its padartha, be Brahman. You know? Instead of the padartha, you know, the meaning of the word be the body-mind complex.
Mm-hmm. Or the I lands in consciousness?
Yeah. The consciousness which is Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
The consciousness which is the self. So now, you have to be careful there, because... Mm-hmm. Well, there's not for everybody, but people have their own thing with words. Like if you say the word just consciousness, that's fine. It's a good word. We use it, Chaitanya or Chit. We use this word. But does that word, consciousness, denote yourself,
yeah.
the Atma?
Yeah, yeah.
The Atma is consciousness.
Yeah.
The Atma is being, pure conscious being. But... those words, like pure conscious being, can be conceptual,
mm-hmm.
like a theoretical concept in your mind. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want that. We want the words like sat-chit, consciousness, being, to be words that are used as pointers, pointing to your own self-experience. So your own self-experience, your own being, you have to say, okay, she's using this word being for me. Now, what would that mean, my being, I am? What do I mean when I say I am, if I get rid of the body and the mind and the sense organs and all of these things that can actually be objectified? Then if she's saying am, your amness or your consciousness, the consciousness, what is it pointing to? It's not a theoretical... kind of a frame.
Mm-hmm.
They're words that are pointing to your own self. And so now all these words like consciousness, one pointer, being, I, me, whatever, all these words, they're all synonyms pointing to trying to make the mind fall upon, differentiate your own presence.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to see what we mean by the word. See what I mean? Because there's no object out here, consciousness, that you can hold up. Like I can say, see, this is a desk. That's easy. The Pada and the Padartha are both... The Padartha is right here that I can put a word to it. But I can't do that with consciousness. Right? Because consciousness isn't something you can objectify, but it's something which you are. So it has, because you are it, the word can, you know, can manage to get there.
Yeah.
Only because you are that.
But by saying the word, it doesn't automatically put me there.
I mean, no, because consciousness, like if say you don't have any teaching, consciousness is a word. What does it mean? It has a lot of different means. I'm conscious of that. I mean, I'm an aware person. I'm conscious of that. You use consciousness just in the sense of I'm a conscious being to differentiate me from an inert being like a table.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But then I can mean I'm a conscious being. This body, mind, sense organs person is a conscious being and the table is not a conscious being. And so we have, you know, then we, even if we use the word being, being is an object. I can't say, look at this being. So we use the word being or existence for things that are versus things that are not. Right? There's not independent being. Where actually being itself is the noun. Right? This would be chair being and lamp being and person being. Being is the noun. One, but I can't know it as an object. I, you know, but it is me. I am. The amness or the beingness is experientially present as in a paroksha way, not as an objectified way, but as by very nature. Right? And so these words, the whole teaching methodology, you have to strip off of the sat-chit, the things that it has been superimposed on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you have to do that whole teaching methodology till I'm just left with myself as being alone, and then the Mahavakya points to that. You say, see? We've differentiated everything from it, and then see what is there. It's the sat-chit that is there. Right? Because from myself, as a jiva, and body, mind, sense organs, I'm swimming in being. Right? There's never anything that doesn't enjoy being. And there everything enjoys chit also as either it is known or it, from the standpoint of the mind, it gets labeled as the knower known. Right? It depends on my relationship to the object. But there's nothing that's not known in experience. You can't have every experience you have is known. That's the chit. Including your mind is known, your sense organs are known, your body is known, your perceptions are known, your moods are known, your imaginations are known. There's nothing away from it. That's consciousness. But there never at any time is there anything away from it. You know, you can't shut it down.
In your talking about the languaging of it, and
uh-huh.
and it makes me realize that very often there's a confusion in my mind between consciousness and mind. That mind and consciousness.
That's why we have to.
The concept is there, but the.
That's why when we do the drik drisha, the seer seeing differentiation, you have to. To just sit there and notice that your mind is one thought after another, feelings and all of that. That all of those are objectified. And that there's a self that's not coming and going. Everything in the mind is coming and going. The self remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't come and go. So that's the viveka. So then you have to recognize yourself is not ever coming and going. You're always there, stable. There's no time for you. There's no change. You're stably present and all of the things that you're present to are coming and going.
It's I don't know about in Swamiji's writing, but in some literature they use the term witness for
witness.
Consciousness.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We use witness for a while for part of the seer seeing differentiation, and then in the end we get rid of it. We use the witness in order to differentiate the subject from the object. When you get to the mind, we say, well, say the self is the witness of the mind. It's not the witness of the mind. But to differentiate consciousness from the mind, we start there. But then when you remove the mind, then consciousness isn't doing anything. It's not witnessing anything, it's just consciousness. Mm-hmm. But it's a tool to do this differentiation all the way through to the Atma. Then you get rid of the objects, you know, the mind and the sense organs and the body and all these perceptions, and then what you're left with, that you've called the sakshi twam, the state of being a witness, resolves into just consciousness.
So,
so if you use sakshi, it will be dropped in the end.
This anuvarti, it goes through, it strings through all the states of experience, all the stages of life, all the births, all the different upadis. It mm-hmm. goes to that extent then.
Yeah. And we use like the bead string of beads, but that's, you have to be careful. I mean, it's not a string, you know.
but there's that memory, huh?
The presence is, the memory comes from the mind, right? But the mind is remembering I, right? It has the I is a pada, is a word that is labeling the self. So then the mind will say, I means, now it's labeling the self. Doesn't always know that, but it, you know, that's what it's labeling, because the truth of the mind is the self. So it says, you know, I had a dream. Right? But everything about me that it's referring to, that it thinks it's referring to, is actually, was not there in the dream. What was there in the dream was me, which is consciousness. Right, that's the anuvritti. I am present to all states of experience without change. I'm never not there, and I'm not changing. I'm the only thing that is like that. Everything else is mithya. Everything else is coming and going. I'm not. So now I have to differentiate in all my experience, what is it that is never changes? What about me never changes? It's always exactly the same. And as you start to notice that, that becomes predominant. Because once predominant in the sense it comes more to the reality of it comes more to the forefront. It's like the clay coming more to the front forefront of the pot, which is impossible, right? It's impossible for the clay to come more to the forefront of the pot. But that's what happens, because the pot mind is conscious as though. Conscious, it's conscious of itself, and it's reflective. And so what happens is the mind itself recognizing that its self is consciousness. And so the consciousness becomes more to the forefront of the mind, which is usually more involved with its thoughts and with its perceptions. You know, but now it's still involved with all of that, but the consciousness, which is its very being, the very clay of the pot, is something that, you know, that changeless presence of me is totally to the forefront. As all the while all these other things are happening, because I've recognized it. Once you recognize it, it's never not in the forefront, it's always there. And it always was there. It's just you hadn't thought about it like that.
And this mudra, is this the ahankara?
Yeah. You can even say it's the ahankara, it's the atma. It's the ahankara. Because the ahankara takes itself to be, this is the ignorance, it takes the atma to be this.
Right? Attached.
Yeah. And now it realizes that the atma, you know, is this. So now it's the ahankara saying, I am the body, mind, sense organs. Now it's saying, I am this. It recognizes. It's not just words. You know, the padartha becomes known. The truth of the I becomes known. And now the ahankara is known. It's just the aham. There's no notion there. It's knowledge.
What does the chin stand for?
Consciousness. Chin is chit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the ta becomes a na before the ma in some words. Okay.
What? That sounds good.
Could you...
No, I didn't say that.
I have a question about rag and dvesha.
Rag and dvesha.
Yeah, and you know, like for jnani, is there still an experience of...
Of likes and dislikes, yeah, but they have experience of likes and dislikes, but they don't mean anything. They're what we call dagdabijas. burnt seeds, because what makes a raga dvesha samsara for you is that the whole desire template is in play. I want this so that I can be happy. You know, that so that I can be happy is the problem. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have preferences, mm-hmm. but the preferences don't mean anything. If you get your preference, what you prefer, or you don't. But it's not like you become miserable because you're not getting things the way that you want them. Only because your mind isn't asking the world to be in a particular way so that you can be happy. That's the difference, you know. But it's not that you don't have preferences. You do have preferences. Swamiji always uses the example of himself and another sadhu and two sadhus in a restaurant in Madras. One's from North India and one's from South India. And they get the orders mixed up so that the South Indian gets chapatis and the North Indian gets, you know, idlis. And both of them would rather have the other, you know. But the one eats the chapatis and the other eats the idlis. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a big deal.
No, the writing of the template, as you call it, of the desire and aversion, is that only there because the mind is reaching out, is basically looking outside for fulfillment? Is that how the rag and dvesh gets kind of generated? Because what is generating the whole thing? You know, is it just because the vision is lacking? But that, how does it exactly work?
No, because there's culture, there's upbringing, there's the product of karma. So there's going to be preferences. Mm-hmm. Just naturally, just by the very fact that you've taken this birth, and there's a whole unfoldment of your life, where there'll be preferences. But you could even say, you know, like just people and situations that it's just easier for you, you're more comfortable in. But there's no one inside that is making an issue out of it. In other words, I can be full and complete in an uncomfortable situation as well as in a comfortable situation. But it doesn't mean that so you have knowledge and all situations become comfortable. That's definitely not true. There are comfortable and uncomfortable situations. But there's a certain objectivity because you're not asking the world to all of a sudden become comfortable. The world is not comfortable. I mean, it has all kinds of things going on.
But it's a right,
you're this reaction of raga dvesha, I hate this and I love this and all of that. That's not there because you don't think like that. You're not asking the world to be in a way that you're going to hate it when it isn't.
But originally in an unconscious state, they get generated by the manas? Is that where they get generated?
Yeah, but well, the hatred gets generated and the dislike comes when you have that desire template that goes, I need this to be happy. Mm-hmm. And then the things that are helping you to achieve that, you like. The things that are helping you, that are thwarting your achievement of that, you dislike. To the point of extreme hatred, to the point of slight irritation to extreme hatred, you know, or slight pleasure to extreme joy. These are just in reference to the things that are facilitating you get what you need, getting what you need to be happy. And then you finally fulfill the desire, and then you feel that burst of joy or happiness. And then that immediately gets threatened in one way or another because somebody could take it away from you, and then that will create dvesha. Some situations or things can interfere with that gain, you know, or other things can facilitate you being able to keep that happy state, you know. So it's really all about the self being projected onto the world, and then you trying to get this transitory experience of the world to, mm-hmm. you know,
right,
to make it happen for you. Mm-hmm. It's a very frustrating ajnana. It's very frustrating because you can't win. Mm-hmm. You can't win the game. You know.
It's a juggling act.
Hmm? It's a juggling act. For everybody it is.
Yeah, yeah. It keeps you busy.
Some people, you know, our karmas every life is that we go through is different. Some lives are more conducive to not having a lot of raga dvesha be generated. Some lives are more conducive. It's that particular life has a lot of punya in it. Other lives, you know, are harder. You know, there's a lot of stress and stuff in the life. But all of them, you know, we learn from all of them. And sometimes they say, you know, the difficult lives are good because they're great teachers.
You know, what'd you say?
They're great teachers.
I wonder what Vedanta is saying about, can you actually, you know, coming from in Buddhism, you can break out of the cycle of samsara,
yeah,
and then, you know, be born in another realm.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what is...
In Vedanta, of course, there always are going to be other... Until you have knowledge, there are always other realms. There's many other realms, and there's punya realms where there's just it's more subtle, and there's a lot more joy and that type of thing. But the really breaking out of samsara is where this whole upadhi itself is is given up.
Mm-hmm.
Because of knowledge, and then you are just Ishwara. This identification with the upadhi, body, mind, sense, organs, is really because of ajnanam. Because in fact, you are not an upadhi. Upadhi means a body, mind, sense, something for a false identification. You're not that. That's not who you are. So when you gain knowledge, that core ignorance is gone. And so this body, mind, sense, organs is going to live out the life until the prarabdha karma is over. But when it's over, there is no one inside who's an ajnani to continue that.
So there's no more birth?
No more birth of any kind. You're Ishwara, which you already are anyway.
That's such a remarkable concept. It's more than a concept, but it is just astounding.
Well, you know, with the meadow example, who are you? Are you the meadow, or are you the individual in the meadow? You could say, well, actually, I'm the self from whom the meadow comes. And then if I have to choose one, am I the meadow or the individual? Well, I am the individual, and I am the meadow.
Mm-hmm.
But the individual is part of the meadow,
mm-hmm,
right? So really, I'm Ishwara. If I think I'm just... Ishwara means the whole. It means Brahman, the self, with the Maya, right? That's Ishwara. Otherwise, I just look at everything as Brahman. But if I'm taking into account the Maya, then I'm Ishwara. And the individual jiva is included in that. So I'm not just the little jiva. I'm Ishwara. And so when you gain knowledge that ahankara, you know, goes from this to this, and now the body dies, what is there to transmigrate? There's no ajnanam. Right? So that's different in Buddhism. Doesn't talk like that. Actually, if you go to Buddha, what Buddha says, this is one of the 12 questions he won't ask. That
answer.
He won't answer these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens to a wise person
after death?
After death, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Do they live or not live, or live and not live, or you know? He's not. You know, just deal with the arrow being pulled out of your leg.
Okay.
Don't get into this. He doesn't deal with it. He doesn't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, from the Buddha standpoint, the pramanas that he accepts are perception and inference, not shabda, not Vedas.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens after the death and all of that? That's not within our means of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He won't deal with it at all, and he shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
If he accepted the Vedas as a pramana, then he would look to the Vedas and see what they say.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't accept that. And so then he says, there's no reason, you don't need to know that, you don't need these cosmologies, and there's nothing I have to say about it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's reasons for that.
Why didn't he accept the Vedas? I mean, what was this trouble with the Vedas?
I'll just give a semi-layperson's answer. Is that at the time of the Buddha, there was a lot of corruption in the Brahmana caste.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of corruption. And they were doing rituals and whatnot and getting a lot of money for the rituals. And, you know,
So as a reformer, sort of, is that?
And that's one of the things they say. So he rejected. It's kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. They rejected that whole thing. And also, there's another thing that I don't know much about this, but within India, also there was tribes of ascetics, samanas, and they had different groups that he was also influenced by those people, who were not part of the Vedas at all, but they were like wandering ascetics.
But wasn't Shankara living before Buddha?
No.
Or after?
I think he was living after the Buddha, and in fact he was really responsible for really driving a lot of the Buddhists out of India. Shankara was. But there, I haven't studied a lot.
Not driving them out, but changing the ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, same thing.
Or debates.
Huh?
In the debates, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, the ahankara is the I notion.
Yeah.
So then the I notion is also things that's doer.
Yeah, the karta and bhokta.
Right.
That's right. That's because of identification with the mind. Like a doer would be, I see, I'm a seer, I'm a hearer, I'm a thinker, I'm a feeler, I'm a walker, I'm a talker.
That's the I notion.
Yeah, that's the karta and bhokta all involve the ahankara.
The bhokta is an enjoyer.
Bhokta is enjoyer. Karta is doer.
Right. So
that requires the ahankara to be identified with the thing that's doing the action.
Mm. Right. Mm. That's the
So seer means the ahankara is identified with the ears. With the eyes. Hearer, it's identified with the ears. Mm. You know.
And then there's the eye of the eye. Ear of the ear.
Mm-hmm, that's the Kena Upanishad.
Mm-hmm. So then the moment that this happens, what makes this happen?
No, this is knowledge. When this happens, this is the result of knowledge. Then the eyes are still, the ahankara is still there, but it's a burnt seed. In other words, you know what it is. I'll still say, I see, and I am seeing.
Right.
But as I say, I am seen, I can say, I'm seen and I'm not seen. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing and I'm not hearing. Mm-hmm. Because I'm aware of myself, which is not performing any action at all, and I'm aware of seeing. The seeing and the hearing, like if you have a dream, all of these things are going on in the dream. Your dream character in a dream. There's seeing, there's hearing, there's thinking, there's moving, there's walking, all of these things are going on. Right? Mm-hmm. Those all belong to the upadhi. But the self, which is the truth of all of that, is not seeing, is not hearing, is not walking, is not talking. And both you recognize.
So this happens because of knowledge.
Knowledge, yeah. In fact, this is the truth. This is already the truth.
Yeah.
Right? But the ahankara thinks this.
Right.
This is ajnanam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this happens effortlessly, really.
It's recognition.
That's exactly not about doing or anything. It's knowledge.
It's knowledge.
Well, he teaches in silence like this.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Is that the recognition in a way? I mean, because you know, you can have a little recognition, then you go back to believing.
Then you need to do manana. So you see it, and then your mind will go, yeah, but what about this? Or did I understand that right? Couldn't it be like this? That means that you have to keep doing shravana and manana.
This means like almost like you really have complete knowledge. Is that, or is there a back and forth? You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's back and forth for a person who's understanding. Like you think you get it, but you don't. But this is clarity. This is clarity.
It's like the telegraph.
This is when you know.
Yeah.
And this is what all of the teaching keeps pointing to. So it's just a mudra. It's just a symbol for it.
Isn't this also called a jnana mudra?
Jnana mudra.
Yeah, but isn't that the same?
I don't know. Mm. I know it as chin mudra, but maybe this is jnana mudra too, because there's many different mudras.
It might be just a different name for the same.
It could be.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be.
Well, I know it's just a mudra, but I think it's a very, very effective one.
No, it is. I didn't mean just a mudra, but it's a mudra which holds a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice reminder.
at the last session, you said you were having us kind of be conscious of the room, you know, and then you said something that really kind of clicked with me. You know, I always think of consciousness in my head, and you said it isn't confined.
Yeah.
That, so that kind of, you know, I thought, oh.
I'll work on that more in meditation. Yeah, that's true. It's not consciousness, it's not contained. It's also not big or small.
Because even when you say that, you know, you keep thinking that consciousness originates from the mind.
That's the Dehatma Buddhi.
Or the body.
Yeah, it's such a strong conclusion.
It's so vivid. Mm-hmm. And it's wrong.
Well, it's right and wrong. Because like if you say, that's the Satya Mitya. You say, the pot is the clay. That's true, right? The pot is the clay. It's nothing else. There's only clay there. But the clay is free of the pot. And so your body is consciousness, but consciousness is free of the body. Mm. Your mind is consciousness, but consciousness is free of the mind. Mm. So the upadis are consciousness, but consciousness is free of the upadi. And if consciousness is free of the upadi, then there's no place that consciousness is not, which is true. In reference to this maya, this creation, there is nothing that is not consciousness.
Yeah, that's why light is so often
But then
used.
You have to think of consciousness not as a not as a knower, but just the conscious presence.
Like in this room, you know, we're aware of everything in this room because we can see it. And so, but light is not affected by all these objects in the room. So that's why, there's an illusion.
You can use that. That's a little weak example, but I know what you're trying to use. Because we do use light. We have to stop.
So what did you promise? Yeah, okay, we can stop.